Good morning, and I am joined by Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Mary, good morning, and happy May to you.
Happy May, Denny. What a beautiful day to get out and garden and enjoy the green outside.
Oh, my goodness. Things are happening. I bought some tomato plants last week, and I've had them under a grow light. Not in particular, but just where I, you know, keep the Meyer lemon tree. And I think if they stay there much longer, I'm going to have a supply of tomatoes. They are really growing so early. But I wanted to invite our listeners to join in, and Mary knows how busy we get during this Smart Garden Hour. So if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, and we're already receiving those, call Mary or text Mary. It's the same number, 651-989-9226. Mary, I want to mention that we're in the last couple of weeks or so, we're getting text messages about something I don't think I've heard before, and it's jumping worms. What is that all about?
Oh, jumping worms. So this is another type of invasive pest that we now have in Minnesota. So these are a worm that is an annual. So this worm only lives one season and then dies, but it lays eggs and cocoons that then can overwinter. So we've seen kind of an explosion of these new worms, which are voracious eaters, and they will eat plants. And we usually notice where they are because there is nothing there but bare soil. So we do have these at the Arboretum, and gardeners are noticing them. We have a lot of great information online about this and how to identify them. I will say the key thing for right now is be on the lookout, because they, as I said, they're annual worms. They are not really visible yet in the garden. It's close. They like cool conditions, so I guess that's why they like Minnesota, but they don't like heat. But it does take a while for them to grow and become visible in the garden, and they are very active, and they do jump around. So certainly something for gardeners to be on the lookout for.
Does it have, and another text came in about the jumping worms, about mulch options, bagged or bulk, how to prevent the spread. Does it matter either the type of mulch options?
It might. It all depends on, of course, if the mulch was clean to begin with, you won't have a problem. It can be spread easily. Jumping worms can be spread by mulch or by getting plants from another gardener who has it but don't know they have it, and you get some soil that comes when you're doing a plant exchange and so on. The temperature is really critical for these worms, and the kind of good thing is it doesn't take a lot of high temperature to kill them. They're killed at about 105 or 110 degrees. So it can get that hot in some soils. And of course, if we help it with solarization by putting plastic down to get the soil warmer, that is a way that you can kill them. So sometimes they might have been killed if they're in a bag of mulch, and other times not so. So it's hard to say yes or no with bag or bulk.
Absolutely. A texter wants to know, Mary, is it a good time to apply a weed and feed product to the lawn, or would it be better to wait for warmer temperatures?
Well, we're just on the very beginning of being okay for lawn fertilizer. You know, we want the lawn to be actively growing when you put on fertilizer. The weed killers, and it's still, other than the pre-emergence for crabgrass, we're on the end of doing that. But most of the broadleaf weed killers to kill dandelions and so on, those plants have to be up and growing. Now, we see quite a few dandelions, so that could be a weed you could control now. But again, please read the label, because the temperatures will really indicate when that those chemicals become active. So we have one warm day today, but then cooler temperatures, usually below 50, a lot of our herbicides don't work very well.
Okay. Let's grab a phone call, Mary. I think Nancy is waiting there in Edina to ask you something. Nancy, good morning. You're on with Mary.
Oh, good morning, Mary, and good morning, Danny. I have a question. About a month ago, I bought a potted stephanotis plant. It had beautiful white blooms. The blooms were done, and the leaves are growing profusely. I've fertilized it a little bit with Miracle-Gro, but I see nothing coming for blooms. What can I do? Or how often does it bloom?
Yeah, stephanotis, well, it varies as to how old the plant is. But I would say if you give it good light conditions and some regular fertilizer, that you can expect it to bloom again. So and many of the plants are that we buy have had great conditions in the greenhouse. And then in our homes, especially with light, it's very difficult for plants to have enough light. So
okay.
I would say, yeah, so I would do liquid fertilizer on it, maybe half strength or regular strength. Every 2 weeks, and then make sure it's in good light conditions.
All right. Thank you, Nancy. Let's see. I know we have to break, but I want to bring in Mark from Andover with his question. Mark, thank you. What is your question for Mary Meyer?
Good morning, everyone. I have a question about a locust tree. It's a young tree that's probably 4 to 5 years old. I've got a couple of limbs that appear to be dead because the roots were disturbed a little too much. Is now a good time to prune those dead limbs off?
Yes, you can go ahead and do that. Locust tree, honey locust probably is what you have. It's fine to go ahead and do the pruning now. We don't want to do any pruning on oaks right now, but a locust, and especially limbs that are dead, yes, it's good to prune those off.
And should I treat, should I treat the cut spot with anything, or can it just stay raw and bare?
It can stay bare. Trees have a tremendous capacity to heal over, and you really don't need to do that. Occasionally, we do recommend putting on something to cover an open wound, but that's more in the case where we're trying to limit insects that would spread diseases. And with locusts are great plants that have minimal disease problems, so the plant will heal itself.
Very good. 651-989-9226 is the phone number. It's also the text number here on our Smart Garden Show. If you'd like to get in touch with Mary Meyer and ask your lawn or garden question, that's the way to do it. 651-989-9226. It's already 60 degrees in the Twin Cities on our way to 85. You stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the show on News Talk 830. This is WCCO. And good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We are here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour welcoming your lawn and garden questions for good folks like our friend Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, who's on air this morning helping you out. And as usual, Mary, we have a bunch of callers and a bunch of text messages to answer as well. And I want to talk to you maybe after the weather break about what's going on at the Arboretum. What a day to get out there today. All right. We need to help some folks out via phone. Linda is first up. You're calling from Columbia Heights, I believe. Linda, you're on with Mary.
Hi, good morning. Oh, I have a Creeping Charlie question.
All right.
My Creeping Charlie is starting to bloom. Is this a good time to put down some spray?
Well, we feel the best time for controlling Creeping Charlie is in the fall, Linda. Just starting to grow now, as you say. The Creeping Charlie in my lawn, yes, I have it in my lawn, is blooming as well, but the foliage is very small on it so far. and we rely on the chemicals that kill Creeping Charlie to be taken up by the foliage. So you've got to have a significant mass of a plant there and the right temperatures and the labeled chemical for this to work. And usually it takes two applications. So if all those things, if you've got a big enough plant now, you can go ahead and use chemical control for it. Creeping Charlie is very difficult to control just with chemicals. You usually have to do something about the environment that's causing that to outcompete. Usually a lawn is what people are trying to grow when they have Creeping Charlie. And if it's shady or conditions are not good for grass, it's going to be tough to get rid of the Creeping Charlie just by a chemical spray. Consider using a different ground cover or a shady lawn mix like the fine fescues.
Okay. This listener wants to know, when should I plant sweet corn in my garden here in the Twin Cities?
I think it's a little bit early to be planting sweet corn. There have been great advances with sweet corn, more tolerant of cold soil conditions. But usually that is something that requires the warmest of soil conditions, 70 degrees or warmer. You could try it right now if you know what your soil temperature is and that it's close to 70 degrees. I haven't seen soil temperatures above 60 in my own garden area, but it's kind of a risk now. I would say you'd be much safer if you wait till mid-May.
Okay. Back to the phones we go. Jerry's calling in from St. Paul this morning. Jerry, you are on with Mary.
Yeah, good morning. Say, I've got a raised garden bed on the south side of my garage. I've been mostly had vegetables in there, tomatoes and peppers and like that. But this year, I just want to put in some wildflowers, and I was wondering if I have to do anything to the soil, and when can I start planting the seeds?
For you, Jerry, you will get a lot of pollinators, a lot of bees, butterflies with putting in those wildflowers. You don't have to do anything different to the soil to plant wildflower seeds. I would just make sure that the seeds have good soil contact and that you water them afterwards. You might want to try a combination of seeds as well as plants. Some of the wildflower seeds can take a couple of weeks to actually germinate. And I would use a combination of annual and perennial wildflowers as well. And, you know, you really don't have to do just one or the other. You could put wildflowers in and still have some vegetable plants as well. We know that if there are flowers there, the pollinators will come, and that really is helpful for our squash, cucumbers, and things that rely on pollinators to actually have the fruit set. So you might want to do some of both.
Okay. This listener wants to know, they want to locate an arborist, a certified arborist, and they live in Anoka County. What would you suggest they do to search?
Well, we do have information on how to select an arborist. That's an information sheet that we have online at extension.umn.edu. These are some of the things to look for. You can also look for recommendations from your friends and neighbors. But most arborists will be very open to coming out and giving you estimates, and you can always get estimates from a couple different people. Most arborists will show on their website their certification, the training that that they have. So you do a little research, and I think you could find some good ones, because we have lots of them in the Twin Cities. And with the interest and the issues between oak wilt and emerald ash borer, there's a lot of great qualified arborists in our area.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, let's grab a phone call from Gene's calling in from Napa, Wisconsin, I believe. Yeah, Gene, you're on CCO with Mary.
Thank you. Hi, Mary. I want to make sure that I don't import jumping worms on some apple trees I'd like to buy. Are jumping worms ever found on bare-rooted stock? And if you buy potted stock, should we be doing something like washing off all the soil or something before bringing them on site?
Well, you'll have very little chance, much less chance of getting a jumping worm with bare root plants, because the bare root plants, yes, when you see those, they're kind of shocking. There's nothing on them. There's no soil on them at all. And this only happens with deciduous plants and plants that are completely dormant. So sometimes it's even hard to tell the top from the bottom when you have a bare root plant. There's nothing there, so you have very little risk of getting jumping worms on bare root plants. In containers, your best bet is to talk to where you're buying them. Ask them about them. Ask them if they use sterilized soil, if they've ever had issues with them, if they're growing these plants themselves, or did they get them from somewhere else. And so that's really the best thing. Not too many growers have had issues in our in Minnesota. Most of our issues are actually the plants. The worms are in the soil, and they're in the ground. And a lot of growers use commercial potting soil that is not in-ground soil. If they use in-ground mineral soils, they sterilize those, and that would kill the worms. So growers are not usually the source of where these jumping worms are coming from. They are here already, unfortunately. So I'd be more careful from your neighbor or someone else. Now, I will say that this is the season for plant sales. So plant sales are abundant, and one that starts today, the Ramsey County Master Gardeners are starting a wonderful plant sale. They have an online order for, I think you can order for a week, and then you go pick them up on May 15th. They are talking to you about the jumping worm issue on their website, and they say it's all sterile soil, we've already checked. So where you buy your plants, you can talk to people about jumping worms, and that should give you the information and the knowledge to go forth from there.
Very good. All right, Mary, let's take a break and have a look at that warm forecast, at least for today, and we'll be back. We have another half hour of the show to go on our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. At 60. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Lawn and Garden Show. We call it Smart Garden. Welcoming your lawn and garden questions to Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, 651-989-9226. Well, here it is, Mary, the 1st of May, and what is going on, I suppose, as usual, a lot at the Arboretum?
Yes, there's a lot going on at the Arboretum, and it's certainly a beautiful place to see spring flowers. There are many wildflowers, of course, in the Dayton Wildflower Garden. That's a peak thing in the spring, and there are lots of wildflowers out. The tulips are starting to bloom. So the tulips is our formal garden that you can see. I would say the tulips are maybe one third of the ones that are planted are out. So they're just starting to show a lot of color. And the early rhododendrons are a lot of the purple rhododendrons are out, and the daffodils are still beautiful. So it's a wonderful place to take a walk. You will have to have reservations to go to the Arboretum. Members are free. Other adults are $15 each. A week from today will be the auxiliary plant sale. So this is another one of the spring plant sales. It's free admission to go to the plant sale, but if you want to go to the Arboretum as well, then the regular admission applies. And the plant sale is going to be up at the farm at the Arb. So a different location than it has been. I guess it's been there a couple of years now, but a great number of things to take in at the Arboretum. Tomorrow is the bud break run, and then their markets through May. There's some special markets with vendors. You can look online and see if one of your favorite vendors is going to be selling things at the Arboretum. So lots to do.
Boy, I should say. And we'll remind folks, too, in next week's show about what's going on as well. All right. We have many calls. We have many texts, Mary. Let's get to it. Kelly is first up here calling from Coon Rapids. Kelly, what's your question for Mary?
Hi. I've got a clematis that it seems to put new shoots out of the old growth. Is there any way for me to prune back or get rid of the old growth without destroying the plant?
Good question, Kelly, because clematis are really tricky. There are actually three kinds of clematis, and it's so difficult to tell what kind you've got and how to prune it. So what I usually do is I wait until I see growth coming on the vine itself, and then I prune back to where you can see that growth. So I know that's kind of a patience thing, but that's the best way to do it. Unless you know the cultivar and can look up online, some clematis will die totally back to the ground. And those can be cut off because they're not going to put out buds up above. But I have both kinds. I have some that I've cut totally back because I know there's nothing living up above, and others that I just wait and see how high up those buds come. Sometimes it's 2 and 3 feet up the vine where you'll have, it's still alive. And then, of course, you have a real head start. So the best thing is wait and see. Usually the top tip, the top foot or two, doesn't have buds on. And usually there's more life in the bottom of the vine. But you just have to look carefully and wait, and they're just starting now. So if your clematis hasn't started growing yet, that's not that abnormal. I would say you still could wait a couple more weeks.
Okay. This texter wants to know, Mary, why does my forsythia only flower at the base of the plant?
Well, unless you have Northern Sun or one of the hardy forsythias that were bred for flowering here in the north, the only flower buds that will live in cold temperatures are ones covered up by snow. And so those protected ones will have flowers, but up above where the air temperatures have been too cold, those flower buds die. Northern Sun is the one that I recommend the most because that was developed here at the University of Minnesota, and that those flower buds will flower, 3 feet, 4 feet tall.
Okay. Back to the phones we go. Marilyn, I believe, is calling from Roseville this morning. Marilyn, good morning. You're on with Mary.
Yes, good morning, and what a beautiful morning it is.
Yes.
I have a couple of questions. I have wintered my geraniums and a number of other plants in my kitchen, and rather than cutting them way back, they've gotten a little leggy, and I'm wondering if I take a cutting, how the best way to root them would be.
For you, Marilyn, overwintering your geraniums, and yes, taking cuttings is one way that we recommend to do it. The commercial growers do this, and they take the cuttings, January or something like that, quite a while ago. But you can certainly do it now. Wherever there's a leaf attached to the stem, that's where the roots are going to come out. So you want to cut a long enough shoot and then cut off the leaf, because at that node, that joint there, that's where the roots will come out. I would use a lightweight commercial potting soil to stick the cuttings in, and then I would not very many leaves on the top because they're going to dry out and they don't have roots, and then I'd use kind of a plastic bag kind of over the top of it, kind of to keep it in humid conditions. Don't put it in full sun, but yet have good sunlight, and hopefully that will root for you. Some of our listeners have probably done this in water, and that's another way of doing it. You can try some of each.
Okay, very good. Let's go to St. Louis Park. Lori has been waiting there to ask you a question. Thank you, Lori. What is your question?
Hi, thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sure.
Oh, great. I have, we bought a couple of tomato plants, and they are they're about 2 feet tall, and they're in pots that are about 12 inches diagonally, and they're called bush tomatoes. One is a better bush, one's a bush Goliath. My question is, do these need to get transplanted into bigger pots? I'm just not positive if I need to do that for tomatoes.
Yeah, Lori, I think that would be a good idea. They're 12 inches is, That's like a minimum. And they're 2 feet tall, so they're a big plant now, and they've got a great head start. But I think that's going to be tough for you to give them enough water and fertilizer to produce. Now, they are bush plants, as you say, so that means they are a smaller plant. They're not going to grow endlessly taller and taller and taller. But I would say yes, if you can put those in a pot that is, 18 inches, even 18 to 20 inches in diameter, I would try that size. Bushes, it's smaller, but still, you've got to water these plants really every day, and they need full sun, and then they dry out sooner. So, yeah, I'd go for a bigger pot.
Okay. This listener, Mary, says, we had two large silver maples removed last year, and we are now having trouble getting the grass to grow in those spots. Is there anything we can do to help get the grass to grow better?
You might try aeration at this point. What you've got there is a lot of tree roots, and silver maples are great competitors for making a lot of roots, taking up a lot of water, and they would have really dominated in a situation like that. So there's just no way those tree roots just take a while to deteriorate and decay and die. And in the meantime, yeah, I would try to aerate that area. The other thing is that the kind of grass seed, the fine fescues, are very tolerant of drier soil conditions. And hopefully now it's in full sun. Fescues grow fine in full sun, but you might have better luck with some fescue, overseeding some fescue seed on there as well.
Okay. This listener wants to know, is it too early to plant geraniums outside in a container?
You know, it's kind of a risk. Today we're going to think we could put anything outside,
right?
Because it's going to be so warm. But it's really kind of a risk. When it's below 40 degrees at night, a lot of plants are not going to like that. And things like tomatoes, geraniums are actually kind of tough. So you could probably get by with geraniums okay. But it is a risk. The real heat-loving tropical plants, I think it's too much of a risk to put them out till we get to about May 10th. Then we're at a low-risk area. Yeah.
As we head to the break, I'm looking at the forecast for the coming week, and the overnight lows are generally around 40, 39 or 40 for overnight lows. So let that be your guide. All right, let's do generally around 40, 39 or 40. For overnight lows, so let that be your guide. All right, let's do this, Mary. It's 8:00. And good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO Radio every Saturday in the 8:00 hour, welcoming your lawn and garden questions either by phone or by text. This morning, Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota helping you out today. 651-989-9226. Mary, maybe we can mention before we run out of time, and you did it earlier in the show, the university website, and maybe for new listeners, what, and there's so many things you can find there, but give us some examples of what we can find in that great website.
Yes, the website is extension.umn.edu, and then you click on Garden, and you'll find lots of information there. You can sign up to get the Yard and Garden newsletter, which comes out twice a month, and that's where the tips are from all the extension educators about timely information and what to be doing in your garden. But we also have information on what's wrong with my plant, what insect is this, what weed is this. So lots of pictures and lots of great information. This morning I was looking at the lawn calendar, which Julie Weisenhorn made, which is great to tell you what to do when in your lawn. It shows the whole annual growth life cycle of our cool season lawn grasses and when's the best time to do fertilizer, watering, and weed control.
Okay, yeah, it's a great website, extension.umn.edu. All right. Tons of text messages. Here's one, Mary. It says, I have two rhododendron bushes that are getting pretty big the last few years. They are full of buds, but they only bloom around the bottom. What causes this, and what can I do to fix them?
This, again, might be winter injury because the rhododendrons, depending on how much snow cover they have, the exposure, et cetera, the PJM, the purple one, which is the first one to flower, the one that's out now, is one of our hardiest ones, but it still can be damaged by winter temperatures, winds, et cetera. So protecting it, make sure it's as healthy as possible, and think about planting another one at a different location in your home. You might have more success with that. Rhododendrons really do like acidic soil as well, and so that is something that incorporating peat moss into the soil and making sure it's acid where you planted it, that helps also with its growing.
Okay. This listener wants to know, can Dutch white clover be successfully broadcast now?
Yes, you can do that. It will germinate now as the soil is getting warmer. White clover, we know, is a favorite of many of our native bees. It attracts a wide number of bees for it. It will persist in your lawn with mowing, and it also fixes nitrogen and supplies nitrogen naturally, so you don't have to fertilize as much if you have clover in your lawn. It's available at most garden centers now from seed, and very small, but yes, you can broadcast the seed. Needs to land on soil to germinate.
This listener wants to know, when's the right time of year to thatch or power rake a lawn?
You could do that right now. We do, commercial growers are doing, the sod growers, the golf courses and so on, parks do that in the spring and the fall. Fall is the prime time to do it, but if you have thatch in your lawn, if you've got one of those premium Kentucky bluegrasses that does build up a lot of thatch, you can do that now in the spring.
Okay. This listener wants to know, what's a good all-purpose granular fertilizer for outdoor flower gardens?
Well, our traditional one that we've recommended for years has like 5-10-10 or 5-10-5. But what we know now is that many of our soils, especially in Minnesota around the cities, really have high phosphorus, which is that middle number, and they don't need as much phosphorus. So I'd recommend that you have a soil test done to see whether or not you need to add phosphorus and potassium. And then based on what your soil test results are, you'll know how much fertilizer you need to add.
Speaking of fertilizer, this listener said, what should the interval of fertilizing flowers in beds or in pots be different?
Oh, yeah. So when you've got a soil in a container, it has much different growing conditions than it does in the ground. First of all, in a container, a lot of times if you purchase a plant, you're not getting a mineral soil, which is the soil that's in the ground. The soil that's in the ground has got the nutrients. It's usually a very complex living ecosystem. It's totally different than a synthetic or lightweight potting soil that commercial growers use. They're both good, but they're just very different. And the commercial potting soils, They're really lightweight. They're great for air spaces and root growth and rapid plant growth, but they usually have very few nutrients, if any. And so they're totally dependent on us to put the nutrients in there. The mineral soils, they're very different. They're complex and they hold a lot of elements, and they've got a lot more capacity for plants to grow. So they're just two totally different things.
We have a couple minutes to go, Mary. Here's a listener that says, my poor Meyer lemon tree, it is weighted down with 5 almost ripe lemons, but it has scale that I've tried to treat, and now it has a blossom. White leaves are dropping. Any ideas what they can do, this listener can do?
Well, controlling that scale is really a challenge. So I would try, hand removing those sticky, yucky things as much as you can. Maybe an insecticidal soap on that, giving the plant a good shower, trying to remove those. Yeah, that scale is really, really tough on those citrus plants. And, of course, you're hoping to eat those citrus plants, so I would not use any chemical control. The chemical controls will really take care of your scale, but that's a whole year that you won't be able to eat any of the Meyer lemons. The drop of the petals is natural. That's after the fruit, after the flower has finished, the petals will fall off. They can make quite a mess. There's a lot of petals to those, but that's normal. And then the little fruits will start growing.
All right. Mary, we're out of time. Thank you so much for your help as usual. And
Always a pleasure, Denny.
And you enjoy the day today. We will too.
You too. Happy gardening.
Happy gardening to you. Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota. Get those home improvement questions ready. Andy Lind is going to be helping you out to get those answers next hour here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Partly sunny skies. That's what we expect here in the Twin Cities. How about this daytime high today? 85 or near it. Right now, partly cloudy skies. CCO temp at 60.